In August 1660, William Harrison went on a walk to collect rents for Lady Juliana. Something strange happened. Harrison disappeared. This is a gripping, true story of a terrible miscarriage of justice.
May way! News! News, Mr. Thomas Holberbury! May way!
Hold him! That's the horse!
You!
Hold him first!
I sure!
Whoa! Ready up there!
News! I have news, Mr. Thomas Holberbury!
Yes, yes, we heard you. Our master's not here. You may tell me.
It is Mr. Thomas alone.
Oh? On whose order?
My master, Henry Jolliffe of Barton.
Master Jolliffe of Barton?
What? Mr. Thomas, your man said you were not here.
He was obeying my instructions. You have ridden from Boston.
Aye. Sir Thomas, my master sent me direct with news to you.
Who are you?
Jamie Sly, sir. A loyal servant of the king and steward to Master Jolliffe.
And what is this news that requires such attention?
A rider, Sir Thomas.
Where?
Now on the road between Barton and Wolford.
What sort of rider? Is he alone?
Yes, sir.
Armed?
A blade, but no powder.
So, why the urgency?
He travels slowly, Sir Thomas, and covertly. He moves only by the light of dawn and dusk. He rests by day and night.
By night? He's that careful. Mm. That is, Sir Thomas. See Jamie Sly here is fed and rested, and then send two men back with him to Barton.
Yes, sir.
They shall keep us apprised of the stranger's progress.
Sir.
And Curtis.
Sir Thomas.
I must be told the moment Dr. Shirley arrives.
Yes, sir.
The Camden Wonder by Richard Derrington and Roger Hume. With Peter Jeffrey as Sir Thomas Overbury and Richard Derrington as John Terry. The Camden Wonder.
Who's there? Come in.
Sir Thomas, Dr. Shirley is arrived.
Well, here, Thomas.
But a few moments ago.
What the devil's going on?
Oh, my dear doctor, your servant.
Oh, never mind all that. What is going on? Why am I being treated like a criminal?
A criminal? I'm sure.
No, you're not. You take me for an imbecile?
Certainly not.
Will you deny that I've been followed and watched every footstep of the way between Oxford and the borders of your land?
No doubt you've been observed locally. You're a stranger. The curious are always aware of strangers.
Curious, indeed. At every crossroads, every town gate, every turnstile, every inn, there were people watching.
Surely, coming from London, you're used to idle onlookers.
And coming from London, I know when I'm being spied upon.
Spied upon? Well, that's the sign of our times, is it not, Curtis?
It is, Sir Thomas.
See Dr. Shirley to his quarters. He's certain he has food and rest. We will dine this evening, Doctor. I have much to tell you.
Will you have more, Doctor?
Mm.
I thank you, Thomas. No. Full measure, I do assure you. Full measure.
Mm. Good. Good. And the drink?
Ah, that's different.
Splendid. Splendid.
Thomas. The quiet here after London. Camden is so restful, so peaceful. It is all so deceptive.
Come, we'll sit by the fire.
This is the first evening I've felt the need of walking here. Maybe this room retains the heat of the day's sun, but
the days draw in and the mists descend.
Yes. And the danger increases.
Yes. You wrote of danger in your invitation. Danger of what?
One moment. That is.
Yes, sir.
You may clear.
Thank you, sir.
Good. But leave to drink.
Yes, sir.
We are not to be disturbed.
No, sir.
Do we have news from Camden House?
No, sir.
No, I thought not. Do not wish to draw further attention to Master William, God rest his soul.
Shall I send for news, Sir Thomas?
No, if they want us to know anything, they'll tell us.
Thank you, Sir Thomas.
Who is...
Wait.
What?
I hope you will find your room comfortable. We don't often have visitors to stay with us, but I thought you'd prefer to be here rather than in the village.
Curtis?
Of course you were watched on your journey here. We're all watched.
Watched?
It's the same throughout the country.
Well, in London, yes, but here in Camden. Who is watched in these peaceful surroundings?
I am.
By who?
Neighbors? The church? Servants? My man, Curtis even. Everyone around here mistrusts everyone else. Cromwell's been dead these 23 years, but his supporters live on. There's talk of a possible revival of the Commonwealth.
You have heard that too.
I have heard intelligence whispering of an intention to cut down the glorious head of our kingdom.
No, not again. They've killed one sovereign. They cannot open themselves to such a heinous possibility again.
Indeed they can. That's why I sent for you. Are you able still to print and publish what you will?
We all in the printed trade are subjected to searches of our premises, but so far I have remained inside the law.
I would expect nothing less of you, dear Doctor.
I'm always on the watch. Yeah, I may say, once I realized your chaperones on the way to Oxford intended me little harm, I was pleased not to be riding alone for the latter part of my journey here. The ways between towns and villages are lonely and travelers are few.
Is that why you use such caution on your journey here?
Oh, nothing, I see, escapes your agents. But there was, I assure you, nothing sinister about the pattern of my movement. There is grave risk from common villains and thieves, Thomas.
There's nothing common about the villains and thieves who are my enemies, Shirley. They're among the highest and the most devious in this area. The present lord of the manor here, the Camden family, in the person of Lady Juliana, Viscountess Camden, carries memories, and so do I. Should you do as I wish and publish my pamphlet, those memories may surface again.
And that is what you fear?
You misunderstand me. It is not I who fear. It is they who fear me.
Who, the Camdens? Why should they fear you?
Lest I should encourage speculation.
Speculation about what?
There were deaths in the neighborhood. And justice was not served.
What? You talk in riddles, man. Who died when?
The first death occurred 14 years ago. Oh, so it seemed. On the afternoon of Thursday, August the 16th, 1660 to be exact, William Harrison left his home in Chipping Campden to walk the 2 miles to the village of Charingworth to collect rents due to his employer, the Lady Juliana. With this simple walk began what I believe to be one of the most extraordinary mysteries ever to have happened in England.
Oh, Thomas, you know what these country areas are like. Stories and rumours abound, especially about events which are said to have happened in the time of our blessed sovereign's restoration to the throne. Who told you this tale?
No one. I am part of the story myself.
Ah.
In my capacity as local justice. The first indication that all was not well was William Harrison's failure to return from his rent-collecting walk that evening. Mrs. Harrison's fears for her husband being great, she sent her servant Perry to meet his master, and he not returning that night caused suspicion that he had robbed and murdered him. Thereupon, the said Perry was the next day brought to my court for examination. Examination of John... Surname? What is your name?
John, sir.
John?
Sorry. No, sir. Perry is my name. John Perry.
Ah, good. Examination of John Perry in the county of Gloucester. Taken at Camden, the 18th day of August, 1660. Now, John Perry, do you know where you were born?
Yes, sir. In Camden, where I've lived all my life.
Do you work?
Yes, sir, I serve. Or I did, Master Harrison.
This is Master Harrison who's been gone from his home 2 whole days and nights now.
Yes, sir.
And do you know why you were called here today?
Because I am my master's faithful servant and was sent to search for him on Thursday evening.
No, John Perry. It is a greater matter that brings you here.
Sir?
Do you know where your master is?
No, sir.
Think carefully, Perry. Do you know where Master Harrison is?
No, sir. I was out all the night searching for him.
All the night? At what time did you begin your search?
My mistress called me to the house at 8 o'clock of the evening. She told me my master had not returned. She feared for him. She said I was to go out and meet him and help him home.
And you went?
Aye, sir.
At what time do you go?
Straight away, as my mistress told me.
Which way did you go?
Down Camden Field towards Charingworth.
Why did you go that way?
That was the way my master would have gone.
Did you know he had gone to Charingworth?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Did you know why he had gone there?
Yes, sir. Collect the rents for Lady Camden.
So, you knew the route he would be taking, and you knew that he would have the rent monies upon his person.
Yes, sir.
What happened when you went down Camden Field?
I met Will Reed.
Oh. Now then, young Perry, what are you about? Push that!
Will Reed. I might have known you'd be about at this time of night.
That's right, John. It's my time to be about. What about you?
I'm bidden go meet my master.
Got himself lost, has he?
Got himself drunk more like silly old fool.
Now, now, young John, that's no way to speak of Master Harrison. He's a fine, upstanding, church-going, God-fearing man.
Maybe. But he never hurries home when he's away collecting rents, and you know that as well as I do.
He enjoys getting out and about, does Master Harrison, same as I do.
Ah, but not for the same purposes.
What's that mean?
He don't have bulging pockets when he gets home. And they don't stand around in the shadows for fear of whom we'd be meeting.
He don't have to worry about where his next bite is coming from. He's got a big house to look after him. His pockets bulge right enough with other folks' money. What's the matter with you?
I don't know how you stand it out here all night. I tell you straight, I don't want to go across them fields. Would you walk with me?
Not I. I've business to see now. What's a youngster like you doing afraid of the darkness?
The darkness I'm afraid of.
I know, it's what's about.
What's about?
Things men oughtn't to meddle in. But then, you'd know about that, wouldn't you?
What do you mean?
Come on. I'll walk back with you to Harrison's Gate. You can get young Harrison's horse there for yourself and ride to Charingworth.
What do you mean, so I'd know about such things?
What things?
You know, what things? Why should I especially know about him? Doesn't everybody know about him?
Not the way you do.
It's my ma, isn't it? That's what you're on about. You like the rest of them. You don't like
me. Leave it alone, John. Let's get back to your gate. I've work to do.
And you went back to the gate of your master's house.
I did, sir.
With William Reed.
Yes, sir. He left me there.
Mm-hmm. What did you do then?
I stayed there, sir.
Doing what?
Sir?
What did you do while you stayed there?
Well, nothing, sir. I just stayed there.
You didn't take the horse as you had planned to?
No, sir.
Why not?
It's Master Edward's horse, sir.
So, what did you do between arriving back at the gate with Reed and entering your master's house the next morning?
Nothing, sir.
You made no further effort to search for your master?
Oh, I went into the fields again.
When?
Don't know. Best ask Pierce, he went with me.
Where did you meet Pierce?
At the gate when I was staying.
John Perry! What are you doing here? Ain't you found the old man yet, eh?
How do you know about him? You haven't seen him, have you?
Will Reed told me you was looking for him, but was having trouble finding your way in the dark, so I thought I'd drop by and see if I couldn't help you out a bit.
How are you going to help me? Your half-say's over.
I know these fields like the back of my hand. I can find my way to your blindfolded. Come on.
Yeah, I bet you could. You walks it often enough without the aid of a light. Oh, your sober senses come to that.
Ah, now, John, I was walking these matters before you were born, drunk and sober. Which way do you reckon the old man will come?
I don't think he will come.
Huh? You haven't cracked in the head, John Perry. Come on, I'll walk part of the way with you.
I tell you, he won't come.
There ain't nothing to be afraid of, John. There ain't nothing for any of us to be afraid of.
You can say that now, Pierce. Now you've had a few. Huh? You ain't so happy about the darkness yourself when you're sober.
Ah, that's true enough. But I reckon so long as I've got a Perry for company, there ain't nothing in the darkness that'll dare come close enough for me to see it.
Where did you go with Pierce?
We walked about the fields, searching and calling for my master.
Where did you obtain the light?
Light, sir?
Earlier you told me you were frightened of the darkness. Now you tell me you walked about the fields with Pierce, so I assume you obtained a light from somewhere.
No, we only walked about a bow shot, then we come back.
To the gate of your master's house?
Yes, sir.
What happened then?
Nothing.
You and Pierce stayed at the gate, did you?
Not Pierce. He went off home.
Yes, but you, what did you do?
I didn't stay either.
Where did you go?
When the clock struck 12, I went to Charing Worth.
When the clock struck 12? What happened to the rest of the evening?
Sir.
You say that your mistress called you out to look for your master at 8 o'clock in the evening. You tell us that you spent time talking with William Reed, and then you talked with Pierce. You made 2 short walks and back again to your master's gate. That can't possibly have taken 4 hours. But suddenly you tell me the clock was striking 12.
Maybe I did sleep, I don't know.
Sleep?
Yes, sir. In the hen roost.
Which hen roost?
My master's hen roost.
I see. And when the clock struck 12, you rose and went for Charingworth.
Yes, sir.
Why?
Sir?
Why did you set out for Charingworth?
To look for my master, sir.
So you knew that he'd not come home?
Yes, sir.
But you say you'd been asleep?
Yes, sir, in the hen roost.
And you went direct from the hen roost to Channing?
Yes, sir.
Then how did you know that your master had not returned while you were asleep in the hen roost?
The light was still showing in the casement window. So my mistress always left the light burning when my master was away, guiding back in the dark.
So, seeing that the light was still burning in the casement when you came out of the hen roost, you knew that your master was still abroad, and you set off to Charingworth to find him.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me, John Perry, how was it that you, who were afraid to go to Charingworth at 9 of the clock, became so bold as to journey thither at 12?
At 9 of the clock it was dark, but at 12 the moon shone.
And when you reached Charingworth, what did you do?
Went to see Edward Plaistra, ask him about my master.
Was Plaistra still awake when you arrived at Charingworth then?
Sir, awake, sir.
Was he awake, or did you have to rouse him from his bed?
He was at work, sir.
In the darkness?
It weren't darkness, it was daybreak.
It took you from midnight when the clock struck 12 until daybreak to walk the 2 miles from Camden to Charingworth?
No, sir. When the clock struck 12, I went towards Charingworth. Till a great mist arose and I lost my way.
Oh,
couldn't go forward, couldn't find my way back. So I lay the rest of the night under an edge until daybreak.
And this was daybreak on Friday morning, yesterday morning?
Yes, sir.
And when you reached Charingworth, you met Edward Plaistra?
Yes, sir.
Had he news of Master Harrison?
He said he'd seen my master the day afore in the afternoon.
Had they spoken together?
Yes, sir. Plaistra paid my master his rent that was due.
You know how much that was?
Yes, sir, £3.20.
How do you know?
Plaistra told me so, sir.
Mm-hmm. And having spoken with Plaistra, did you return home straightway?
Yes, sir. And on the road, I met Master Harrison's son, Master Edward.
Hey, father!
Tis me, Perry, Master Edward.
Is my father there?
No sign on him.
Whoa. Where's the silly old fool got himself to? What's the time?
Sun is barely over the hill.
Oh, perhaps he stays in Charingworth.
What for?
To sleep.
He never has afore.
Perhaps he finds the journey too long a walk there and back in one day.
I don't see why that should be.
A man of his age.
Your father is perfectly fit.
He's 70 years old.
And as able to do his duty as ever he was.
Then he should have been back yester evening. He left early in the morning. He's usually back here by 5 of the same evening. And where have you been since my mother sent you to look for him?
Oh, that's for me to know and you to wonder at.
Where have you been since yester-even?
I've been as far as Charingworth and back.
You have not asked in Yubberton or Paxford?
Not yet.
Then why are you returning home?
To know whether my master has returned during the night.
Well, I tell you he has not. He must probably stayed away at Yubberton. Come on, follow me.
Oh, yes.
We'll all go out and look now that the sun has risen. None would accompany me last even when there was no light to you find them. You are Joan Perry's son.
What did you find in Ebrington or Yubberton, as you call it?
Nothing, sir.
Did you follow the road to Paxford?
We did, sir.
And did you speak to anyone there?
No, sir, we didn't reach Paxford.
What prevented you?
On the road from Yubberton to Paxford over towards Mar Furlong, we heard that a poor woman who was leasing had found a hat, band and comb in the highway between Yubberton and Camden.
And this hat, band and comb belonged to Master Harrison?
So it was thought, sir.
How long have you served Master Harrison?
Near all my life, sir.
And you do know his hat, band and comb when you see them?
Yes, sir.
Was there a sign of your master other than his hat, band and comb?
No, sir, we searched for him.
You mean to expect you to find Master Harrison himself?
Yes, sir.
Why should that be?
I knew by then that he was dead.
How came you by that knowledge?
The hat and comb bore the marks of being hacked, and the band was blooded.
Is there anything more that you know of this business that has not yet been spoken of in this hearing?
Indeed not, sir.
Very well. I will now speak to the other witnesses.
I examined the other witnesses and found that they agreed with John Perry's version of events.
So he spoke the truth.
As it seemed. However, I was not altogether satisfied with his answers.
Well, why not?
Well, his eyes were at times dull and blank, but at others there was an alertness in them. It seemed to me that he was carefully constructing a version of events in such a way as to belie his simplicity, that he was affecting a stupidity that was not natural to him. So I ordered him to be kept in custody. First in the town jail beneath the market house, and then in an upstairs room in the Eight Bells Inn.
For how long?
My intention was to keep him from contacting others so long as I deemed it necessary.
I see.
Despite my efforts, over the following week, John Perry managed to talk to a number of people, accusing first one person and then another. But finally, he let it be known that he would talk again to me alone.
Well, John Perry, I am told that what you will discover to me, you will discover to nobody else.
Aye, sir.
I trust that what you are about to say will have more validity than other accusations you have made during the week.
Sir,
understand, Perry, that we are not fools. Can't you see that such obviously false stories can only make your position worse? Now, what do you truthfully know concerning this sad business?
I do know, sir, that he is murdered, but not by me.
Do you know who killed Master Harrison?
Yes, sir.
Then in God's name, tell us that we may bring the law to him.
Sir, there's not just one murderer.
A mob?
Just two of them, sir. And one of them a woman.
Who? Who, for heaven's sake?
Sir, Master Harrison was murdered by my brother, Richard, and by my mother, Joan.
Consider what you say, John. What you now charge your mother and your brother with might cost them their lives.
I say, sir, that in this I speak nothing but the truth.
Tell me how and when this thing took place.
Ever since I come into Master Harrison's service, my brother and my mother have lain at me to help them to money, telling me how poor they are and that it were in my power to relieve them.
And did you do as they desired of you?
On the Thursday morning that my master went to Charingworth, going of an errand into the town, I met my brother in the street.
Not speaking this morning, brother?
Richard, I didn't see thee there.
Oh, to be sure. You lit off the lead this morning, then.
That's right.
Or are you about your master's business? Not collecting, are you? He hasn't gone so far as to trust you with money, has he?
No.
No, he wouldn't believe it. Not to you.
Why not? Why should he not trust me? I'm an
You, my Perry.
What's that got to do with it? We're on it.
Oh, are those of us that can afford it, maybe?
Richard, don't talk so soft.
I know. That's why you're not trusted by your master with his money, because of your family. Us.
We not be trusted, are we? No, not Perry's, not really. We're poor. And our mothers... Don't say that, Richard. May God forgive you. It is bad enough others should think it. They don't think it, John. They know it. Same as you and I know it. But that's no matter, not to us. If our old mom's a bit strange when the moon's full, well, she's not the only one round these parts, is she?
Not by long, right?
And I'll tell you what else. It's not only other folks that don't trust us, Perrys. We don't trust each other.
You're a fool.
We don't. Because I'll tell you what. If we trusted each other, you'd not be so slow telling your mom and me what we are.
'Tis for your own good, as I don't tell you.
How's that?
If you don't know when my master goes to receive his lady's rents, then you'm spared the temptation.
Don't you talk so high and strong to me. You trust your own King John Perry, your own dad.
I do then, prove it.
How? You know how. I can't!
Sit down, John. And did you tell your brother where your master has gone?
I did, sir.
Was that all you told him?
What more was it to tell him?
Did you know what monies Master Harrison would have about him when he returned from Yabberton and Charingworth?
No, sir, he never discussed money with me.
But you knew he'd have a large sum of money on him?
Yes, sir.
Did your brother know this?
No.
No? Oh, John, a year ago when money was stolen from Master Harrison's house while he and his family were at the lecture in the church...
I was with my master at the lecture.
Were you? How came it that the robbers knew exactly when in the house lay 70 pounds?
It was a lucky chance for them, sir.
No, no chance, I think. So certain were they where the money was that a ladder was set up to the window of the very room. You stole that money?
No, sir, not I, upon my oath.
Careful, John, how you swear. You knew that £140 was in your master's room, didn't you? Answer me.
I knew there was a deal of money, not how much.
And you stole it?
No, sir, I didn't.
Not you alone, perhaps. You helped your brother.
No, I didn't help him. I was with my master in the church.
So it was your brother?
Yes, sir.
Ah, he knew of the money. How?
I gave him notice of it.
Yeah.
Told him which room it was and where he might have a ladder and reach the window.
And your brother stole the money?
Yes, sir.
How do you know that?
Huh?
You weren't there. You were in church. How do you know your brother stole the money?
He has told me he had the money and he buried it in the garden.
Where is it now?
Still lies there.
Oh, well, we'll search for it. Come back to the morning of the day Master Harrison disappeared. Did you tell your brother that your master was gone that day to collect rent?
No.
John, this is something you have done before by your own admission. Last year you told your brother of the £140, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
So, I put it to you that on Thursday last week you told your brother where Master Harrison was, when he'd be returning, and what he would be carrying. Is that so?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. What happened then?
I went about the errand I was sent on.
You didn't speak any further with your brother?
No, sir. Not then.
When then?
That evening. When Mrs. Harrison sent me out to search for a man, I met them both by my master's gate.
Both?
Richard and my mother.
John. Richard. Over here. You're out of spot this late. Did you see him?
Who? Oh. Master Harrison, of course.
No, did you?
I saw someone go into the Coney Green. In this dark, you cannot discern any manner to know him. But the gate's locked, so there's no way through the garden but for him who has the key.
It must be him.
Are you alone?
Mother's hereabouts.
Come away with me, Richard.
It is time to make some claim against Master William Harris.
Why him? He's always been caring of me.
Perhaps he had reason, John. But that don't repair what harm he did our family.
Never harmed us.
Our mum.
Oh, she's beyond being harmed.
John, why do you suppose you dwelt with him even as a youth?
Make one less mouth for her to feed, she said.
And you take that for the truth.
I don't take anything she says to me for truth. She's unnatural.
John!
No natural mother puts her child out to live with others.
These must when the devil drives.
Oh. Well, we all know she's well acquainted with him.
Don't you guess
his devil's business we're about, Richard. Come away with me.
Oh, no, I. It's on your word I'm here. And if I fall, you fall with me, whether you strike a blow or not.
Then, following my brother about the middle of the Coney Green, I found my master on the ground, my brother upon him, and my mother standing by.
Was your master then dead?
No.
for after I come up with him, Master Harrison cried out.
Did you understand what he said?
He said, "Our rogues, will you kill me?"
And what then?
I told my brother, I hope he'd not kill my master.
Did he answer you?
He said, "Peace, peace, you're a fool." And so strangled him.
John, take care of what you say. This is your own brother you accuse.
Aye, sir. And my mother. Which having done, my brother took a bag of money out of Master Harrison's pocket and threw it into my mother's lap. And then I and my brother carried my master's dead body into the garden adjoining the Coney Green, where we consulted what to do with it. And at length agreed to throw it into the great sink by Wallington's mill behind the garden.
And that you did?
No, sir. Oh. My mother and my brother bade me to go up to the court next to the house to hearken whether anyone was stirring, and they would throw the body into the sink.
Is that where Harrison's body is now?
I know that, sir. I left it in the garden. But my mother and my brother said they'd throw it there. If it's not there, I don't know where it is, for I returned no more to them, but went up to the court gate, which goes into the town, where I met John Pierce.
Did you then go in the moonlight to Charingworth?
Yes, sir. And taking Master Harrison's hat, band and comb, and giving them 3 or 4 cuts with my knife, I threw them in the highway where they were after found.
Why did you do that?
I did it that it might be believed that my master had there been robbed and murdered.
They left you with little choice, I imagine.
Exactly. I gave orders to arrest Joan and Richard Perry and for the searching of the sink where Harrison's body was said to be. The fish pools in Camden were also drawn and searched, but nothing was found in either place. On Saturday, August the 25th, Joan and Richard Perry, together with John, were brought before me in Bourton-on-the-Hill.
They denied all, I suppose.
Richard confessed he had met his brother on the morning of Harrison's disappearance and spoken with him. But both he and his mother told John he was a villain to accuse him as he had done. John, on the other hand, insisted he'd spoken nothing but the truth and would justify it to his death. Here I must relate one remarkable circumstance. On the prisoner's return from my house in Bourton-on-the-Hill to Camden, Richard Perry, following a good distance behind his brother John, dropped a ball of inkle.
What?
A ball of inkle.
Well, what is that?
Oh, inkle is linen tape, reputed to be used by witches for binding their ceremonial knives.
His mother?
Yeah. It was said. Certainly the old religion was still clung to, well, is still clung to in these parts. Its power is greater than the church would wish us to believe.
So, Richard dropped this ball of inkle.
Yeah. Inkle, yes. Which one of his guards picked up, and Richard asked him to return it to him, saying it was only his wife's hair lace. But when the guard opened it and found a slip knot at the end, he went and showed it to John and asked him whether he knew it. Whereupon he shook his head and said, yea, to his sorrow, for that was the string his brother strangled his master with.
Good heavens.
And then again, the morrow being the Lord's Day, they were brought under guard to church, passing by Richard's house. Two of his children came out to meet him. He took the lesser in his arms, leaving the other in his hand, when on a sudden, both their noses fell a-bleeding, which in view of Joan Perry's reputation was looked upon as ominous.
Thomas, this is not evidence.
But John's confession was freely given and maintained against all opposition. It was enough. All three were arraigned to appear at Gloucester Court of Assize to answer charges of murder and robbery.
All persons who have anything to do this day of September in the year of our Lord 1660 before my lord the King's Justices of Oyer and Terminer and General Jail Delivery for the jurisdiction of the Gloucester Courts of Assize, draw near and give your attendance. Be upstanding in court for Justice Sir Christopher Turner.
John, Joan, and Richard Perry, you stand jointly and severally accused. First, that on or about the 20th of September 1659, you did plan and execute a foul robbery against one William Harrison, and that you did steal from the said William Harrison's house the sum of £140, which sum was never returned or recovered. Second, that on the night of Thursday the 16th of August 1660, you did waylay, rob, and most foully murder the said William Harrison, disposing of his body where it may not at any event be found. How do you plead? Guilty?
A moment, clerk. Prisoners at the bar, we have heard the awful charges laid against you, and I have the evidence before me of your examinations by the magistrate. Before I proceed, I have something to say concerning the murder of William Harrison. The law in this country regarding the supposed murder of an individual is, I regret to say, not entirely clearly laid down. There is no obligation on the part of the prosecution to produce physical proof of the murder. That is to say, no law that demands that the body or identifiable parts of the body be produced. However, in this case, it seems to me that the prosecution has given itself an impossible task, for not only is there no tangible evidence of the accused having committed this murder, there is no tangible evidence that a murder has been committed. Certainly, there is John Perry's confession, but I have a mind to the famous dictum, confession is sometimes the voice of conscience. Experience, however, teaches us that it is frequently otherwise. I will not, therefore, hear the charge of murder against the accused. We confine ourselves to the charge of robbery, which is alleged took place in September 1659.
Prisoners at the bar, to this charge of robbery, how do you plead?
Not guilty, my lord. All honest.
At this point, someone, I've never discovered who, sitting behind the Perrys in the court, distracted John's attention and spoke to him. The substance of the conversation, however, did come down to me. It was that the plea of not guilty would prolong the trial for the calling of such evidence and witnesses as there were, whereas a plea of guilty would mean their immediate release under the Act of Oblivion.
What's that?
No, it was an Act of Parliament passed in celebration of the glorious restoration of the monarchy after the years of the Commonwealth. It offered amnesty to criminals and referred to crimes committed between January 1637 and June 60. Thus, the burglary of Harrison's house came within the Act, and his murder a year later, if it came to court, did not.
Well, what were the reasons for someone advising the Perrys in this way?
That can only be guessed, sir.
To save them more imprisonment, you suppose?
That's a very charitable reading of the situation. The Perrys were not people of any account or power. Who'd be concerned about them? No, more likely it was to save the time and expense of the court. Or to avoid evidence coming to light which it was thought better to suppress. The result, however, was immediate.
Your plea of guilty is accepted, and the benefit of His Majesty's pardon and Act of Oblivion is granted you. You are free, all three of you, to return to your homes.
So, the Perrys went free?
Yes, for a time.
Then you mean they were arrested again?
Less than a year later, they were in court at Gloucester once more.
Well, what for this time?
Murder.
Murder? Of whom?
William Harrison.
But surely that charge was dismissed the year previously.
Ah, no, if you think carefully, the judge, Sir Christopher Turner, refused to hear the charge of murder. The charge to which the Perrys pleaded guilty was the charge of burglary.
So, new evidence about Harrison's murder had been found?
Oh, as far as I can see, not a scrap. But that didn't deter the judge, newly appointed by His Majesty, Sir Robert Hyde.
Members of the jury, it is now my task to sum up the evidence you have heard, though I am sure this case is as clear to you as it is to me. The prisoners stand charged with the foul murder and robbery of an elderly and much lamented gentleman, to which charge they have pleaded not guilty. I will deal with them separately. First Joan Perry, a woman whose reputation is not one to recommend her, a widow some 3 years and apparently no thought of remarrying. One wonders why. You have heard several witnesses describe her as having second sight. I leave it to you to conjecture why no one has felt free to speak outright and say that they believe the prisoner to be a witch. The elder brother, Richard Perry, a man with a young family, which makes his present situation all the more reprehensible. You should remember that the case against Richard Perry as being the actual murderer does not rest solely on his brother's confession. The matter of the slipknot in the ball of Inkle provides independent evidence that the material accusations in the confession are true. I find the plea of not guilty the most extraordinary feature in the case of the third prisoner, John Perry, the man who originally accused his mother and his brother, as well as confessing himself a party to the crime. We have heard how he recognized a ball of Inkle which dropped out of his brother's pocket. He did not hesitate then to name it in front of reliable witnesses as the device with which his brother strangled Master Harrison. Now, faced with the awful consequences of his confession, he tells us he was then mad and knew not what he said. Members of the jury, the charge of being a witch is not brought against well-living people. But that must not be allowed to sway your minds. It is facts that must concern you, and the facts are that they are a poor family, and they knew that on that night in August, William Harrison would be carrying a large sum of money. We also must not forget that in this very court, last autumn, all three prisoners pleaded guilty to the charge of breaking into William Harrison's house and robbing him of £140.
But that's not true. We knew nothing of the money.
But it is on record that you pleaded guilty to the charge of robbery.
They told us that the king had given orders that everything would be pardoned at those trials in honour of his coming back to England and being king again. So it would be safe for us to say guilty because we should not be punished. And it would save the time of all of us if we said guilty, because if we said not guilty, we should have to be tried, but we should be pardoned just the same. So we did as we was asked and we said guilty.
You deliberately told a lie after you had taken an oath to tell the truth.
We were asked to do it.
No one in a court of law could possibly ask you to tell a lie on oath. What you were told was that even though you had admitted your guilt, you would, by His Majesty's gracious act of oblivion, be pardoned.
Only if we pleaded guilty.
Members of the jury, you have heard the prisoner admit that he lied on oath.
No.
Last autumn, the Perrys pleaded guilty to robbery. That they were pardoned and not punished has no bearing on their guilt. The murder has been confessed to. Articles of the missing man's clothing with blood on them have been found. And Master Harrison has not been seen or heard from since the day of his disappearance. These three considerations are, to my mind, quite sufficient to satisfy any reasonable person that there is a case to answer. Members of the jury, you are now required to discharge the solemn duty you were brought here to perform. Consider your verdict.
The Perrys were found guilty and sentenced to death. A few days later, they were brought to the place of their execution in the green and gentle sloping fields outside the town of Chipping Campden on a spring day in 1661.
Morning, St. Thomas. It's a good day for it.
Ah, Nathan, I thought I'd see you here.
Well, it's a chance to get out and about. But in case you like you.
Is that how it seems?
And I promised to meet old Joshua up here. But it looks like he's...
Nathan!
Yeah, over here! Over here, Joshua! Ah, you silly old...
I thought I'd never get here.
Where you been? I've been here since early.
That's all right for you. I have to wait for brothers to get me on tonight.
Hello, Joshua.
Who's that? I can't see you, sir.
Sir Thomas Overbury.
Ah, you. Come to view the results here, and you weren't, have you?
Good day, Joshua.
Oh, brought you up here then, Joshua?
Our Alice. but she had to wait for her cousin from Morton.
Wait, where? They're coming from all over, aren't they?
Can't you tell by this stink? You can smell that they're both of them foreigners. Apart from the funny ways they ever speak, yeah? I heard one man say he'd come from Stowe.
Oh, I'll say one thing for they fairies. They put cabin on them every day, that's for sure.
They say Joe Stiles has done a good job on the gallows, then.
Yeah. Oak and elm for the craftsmen.
Yeah. Could have done with being a bit wider, from what I hear. With three of them to go.
Don't waste wood, do you? Won't hurt them to jostle a bit while they're taking their last dance. This crowd will need a bit of entertaining. Anyway, they deserve what they're getting, don't they?
I always enjoyed the Angans when I was a boy. Now I hate them. And there's been buying and selling all the way up there this morning. People pushing the sea and lay empty coffins.
Now, will you be quiet? What's wrong with people wanting to see? It's only natural. Hanging kills two birds with one stone. Gives out justice to those that deserve it. And at the same time, gives a bit of innocent fun to law-abiding folks. It's a proper holiday.
A devil's holiday.
You go on talking like that, you'll get us arrested.
Don't you worry. They are officers are far too busy enjoying themselves to worry about us.
Hey, they're coming. Yeah, the Perrys are coming.
They're
bringing them across the track. Trent's too wet to bring the wagons across the field. Can't see how many wagons.
There's two wagons.
Yeah?
One for Joan and Richard with their coffins and one for John Perry with the chains.
What are they keeping him, then?
They're letting him swing along till he rots, so they say.
Hey, look, there's that young person.
He's been a chuddling all the way up here.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get him to confess. Seems daft, isn't it? Trying to get him to confess so they're fit for heaven and then strangle him like that.
Hey, they're putting up the ladders. Take your hat off, then.
What for? You've changed your tune, haven't you? I thought you didn't owe no respect for witches and their brews.
I ain't thinking of them. I'm thinking of the folks standing behind you. They want you to view what's going on tonight.
Sorry.
What am
I doing?
It's brought me along now. Jack, they putting up old John first.
That's funny. They usually reckon the same the women to laugh. The crowd enjoy a woman's hanging back.
Now, you see, they say she has some witch's power over her boys, stopping them from confessing. They reckon if she goes first, they'll maybe tell us all about it. There goes the past, Midget.
Christ, have mercy upon me.
Yeah, she ain't going to say nothing, I don't reckon. Yeah, they go with the ladder.
May Almighty God have mercy upon
you. It's all a soul, it's just a far day go. You can hear the babies crying. And the dogs. They let us know. The dogs. And when it drops, the faithful all are.
Yeah! There she goes!
The ladder was moved from under her feet, and in obedience to the laws of her country, Joan Perry was suspended in the air, swaying and convulsed, until the grip of the rope choked the breath from her body.
Well, there weren't a lot to see. Some busy bodyguard by the legs.
Right, babe.
Why can't folks leave one alone, eh? Hey, they're hardly had time to twitch.
Who's next?
Well, they're putting both of them up. One either side of Joe. Richard's going to say something. They ain't tied his hands yet.
Good friends. Why are you hard?
Tell me. I can't hear.
I will if you just shut up. I can't hear you. Put it on. He said they don't know nothing of Mr. Harrison's death. No one wants to come of him.
That's why I'm so
bad,
Captain
King,
my brother.
Yes, down there, his brother, to tell the truth.
He declares truly what he knows concerning him.
Yeah, what's the other one saying?
He's a sulky bugger if ever I saw one.
No, I'm paying! Here goes Richard!
Richard must have suffered greatly. In consequence of the slovenly way in which the rope was adjusted, his fall was much less than that of his mother, and he writhed and worked in a frightful manner. Every muscle in his body seemed to stretch and swell, and his convulsions and contortions were horrifying to behold. He died with a great struggle.
Hey! They're roping up John now.
He won't say nothing.
Confess! Yeah. He says he will confess.
That I know nothing of my master.
The slimy devil!
What has become
of him?
But I tell you this.
He don't know nothing about his master. Nor what has become of him.
What's that supposed to mean, then?
I don't know. But whatever it means, it's a damn silly. Hey, the saint is back.
May Almighty God have mercy on your soul.
The noose formed an even collar around John Perry's head, which was still upright and unbent. Horrible convulsions seized the struggling frame. It was a terrific scene. A glorious spectacle of suffering that delighted the crowd to gaze upon. A trickle of blood ran down the corner of John's mouth where his teeth snapped at his flesh while he died. Minutes passed, and still the hanging man battled fiercely for breath. Minutes passed, and not anywhere was a hand stretched forth to give him relief. Sheriff's eyes met priest's in mutual horror. At last, a hasty signal was made to the expectant hangman. Two butchers beneath the scaffold seized upon the sufferer's legs, and soon his agony of more than a quarter of an hour was brought to a close.
With a sigh of relief, sheriff and priest hurried away to ale and grilled kidneys in the 8th Earl's breakfast room. Thus ended the revolting scene of the strangulation of three human beings.
Oh, Count Thomas, they were common villains.
How so? Well,
they pleaded guilty to the charge of robbery.
Only on advice. At their deaths, all three denied they were guilty of that robbery, or that they knew who did it.
Well, there's no smoke without fire. But tell me, what is it that worries you about this? It was 14 years ago.
Bear with me. As foretold by the spectators, that night after they were executed, Joan and Richard Perry were cut down and buried in their coffins beneath the gallows.
Oh. As per usual. And John?
John Perry's body was covered with pitch and he was suspended in chains until he rotted away. He was still suspended there in 62. It's therefore possible that he was observed by a certain traveller arriving in the district at about that time from London. This traveller rode gently into Camden and passed the gates of Camden House, where William Harrison had lived with his wife and his children, the eldest of whom, Edward, had taken his father's place as steward to Lady Juliana. At the church gate, the traveller dismounted and walked wearily up to the porch to give thanks for being safely delivered from his journey. The young parson, the relative newcomer to the parish, greeted the traveller warmly.
May God bless you on your journey, my friend.
Thank you, Father. I look forward to joining you here in the church next Sunday.
Are you planning to stay long in the district, my son?
I hope so, Father.
May I know your name, my friend? Since you are to be a member of our parish.
I am already a member of your parish, Parson. I am the steward to Lady Juliana of Camden House. My name is William Harrison.
My God. Oh, where had Harrison been, did he say?
Well, it is said he claimed he'd been kidnapped and shipped to Turkey as a slave.
Which You doubt?
Maybe you can believe a man of 70 should be kidnapped, stabbed, and shipped halfway across the world. Yeah. Maybe you can believe the story of his extraordinary escape. Maybe you can explain rumors that Mrs. Harrison had received a letter from her husband during his absence, about which she said nothing to anyone, before, during, or after the Perry's trial and execution. And perhaps you can explain why she, having endured his absence with fortitude, should hang herself 6 months after his return.
No, Thomas. I cannot. Mm. I'm a stranger to these details. Back to you.
Oh, there are so many possibilities. Perhaps Harrison's story of being taken to Turkey is true. Perhaps he was working in the greatest secrecy for the Camden family. Perhaps the ties of the old religion are stronger than any of us know.
Are you telling me?
Oh, for your own safety, I'm not telling you anything. I'm asking you to publish a pamphlet.
Yes, but why now? 14 years later?
2 weeks ago, I heard that William Harrison was dead. Until that moment, I could not risk endangering him. He remained until the end in the service of the Camden family. He was a well-respected man of the town.
Well, then perhaps the story should rest with him.
Oh, no. Justice was not served. Why did John Perry confess to a murder which he knew he had not committed? Who spoke to him in court? Where was Harrison and what was he doing? And why, as three innocent people went to their deaths, did nobody in Chipping Camden speak up?
In The Camden Wonder by Richard Derrington and Roger Hume, Peter Jeffrey played Sir Thomas Overbury and Richard Derrington, John Perry. Dr. Shirley was played by Nigel Anthony. Sly and young Harrison, David Holt. Richard and Nathan, Kim Durham. And Curtis, Pierce and Joshua, Brian Miller. Paul Webster played Robert Hyde and William Harrison. And David Bannerman, Reed, Judge Sir Christopher Turner and the Parson. The play was directed at Pebble Mill by Sue Wilson.